Hey, it's Canzano. I appreciate you making this podcast part of your day. Make sure you subscribe if you want more and leave us some feedback. Away we go.
Initialize sequence.
Welcome to The Baldcast, a production of John Canzano's Bald-Faced Truth.
The expectation in 2021, in my opinion, and I think also in talking to Pete and stuff like that too, is that, you know, but, you know, in my mind is that I don't want to just do one thing well. I want to do it all well. You know, I want to be the best in the world at everything, running it, throwing it, tempoing it, 2 minute, game on the line, you know, got one play to, you know, one last shot, first and second down, third down, red zone. We were one of the top teams in the red zone.
Got to do it all well, man. You just got to do everything well. Everything. You got to do it well. You can't just do one thing well. You got to do it all well. That's Russell Wilson in his end-of-season press conference that he did over Zoom last week. Our next guest on the BFT, Nubian for Canzano, is Michael Sean Dugar, covers the Seahawks for The Athletic Seattle. A lot going on with this team, a team I, for better or for worse, invest emotionally in, probably a little too much at times, and Michael Sean is on the line now. Michael Sean, how are you?
I'm good. I was just trying to enjoy a nice little MLK day off, and then the OC rumors hit, and I had to hop on my phone.
I was going to ask you a question, but I'll just start here. I'll just say, Adam Gase, what's your reaction?
Yeah, the Adam Gase thing makes very little sense to me, not just because I necessarily think his eyes did that weird thing at the press conference and the hyperdrive stuff in New York was comical at best, but I really think that, like, his benefit of the doubt is gone. Right? Like, yeah, you were in charge of an elite offense once upon a time with the quarterback who is probably the most known for being in control of an offense, right? Which is, like, fine. You get the benefit of the doubt there. That's how you get other jobs. But then everything that's happened since then, you lose that. The benefit of the doubt is gone now. Now I think you're bad at your job, right? Not because I dislike you personally. There's just the evidence. I'll put it this way. Peyton Manning, right, because that's when Adam Gase was last in charge of a good offense in Denver. Peyton Manning has had elite offenses without Adam Gase. Adam Gase has never had a good one without Peyton. And so there's the issue right there. That's all I really need to be like. I don't understand why Adam still deserves the benefit of the doubt in a make-or-break season for the Seahawks team.
Yeah, absolutely. If you were just to run down, who are the other candidates that, I know there's a lot of them, but who are some of the other candidates that have been rumored for this job over the past, week, but in 48 hours, it seems like it's really heated up.
Oh, man, how much time you got.
Right,
It seems like they're interviewing everyone who's unemployed at the moment. I think I saw they spoke with Doug Peterson, former Philly coach. They spoke with, they intend to speak with the Chargers OC. I think his first name is Shane. I'm not sure how to pronounce the last name there. They intend to speak with the Chiefs QB coach, Mike Kafka. They've already called Anthony Lynn, former Chargers head coach. They're probably going to look internally to their own passing game coordinator, Dave Canales. I think those are the main ones that I've heard so far. A bunch of relatively underwhelming names, you know, I think, with the exception of perhaps Mike Kafka, the QB coach in Kansas City.
Michael Sean Dugar joining us on the BFT. You have written recently about Pete Carroll, Russell Wilson, with this next offensive coordinator hire. It's very important that they're on the same page. From your read of the situation so far, do you think they're on the same page, or is this just a couple of really nice competitive guys for sure, but they're nice guys too, and Pete and Russ, like, are they really going to be on the same page? Do you think that's likely?
You know, I wish I had a better answer for that. I really don't know, and that's the main question that I'm asking myself all offseason, right? Because we know they agree on the goal. I remind people that Russ just named his first biological son Wynn Wilson. Like, and then Pete named his book in 2010, Win Forever. Like, they're undoubtedly on the same page regarding the mission. The mission is the same. Like, we got it. Win a lot of games, win a championship, win multiple championships. Got it. I don't know if they're on the same wavelength in terms of getting there. And that's really important, right? I know we like to isolate, like, coach traditionalists would say, you run the ball in the playoffs, right? Because it's cold. You want to limit possessions and all these other cliches that don't really become true. And that teams like Buffalo this year just tend to just shatter. Like, we're just going to throw it. But really, the process is really important, especially in this new playoff format. Because, I mean, 9 times out of 10, this new format, the number one seed is probably going to go to the Super Bowl. That's just kind of how it works when they have to play, you know, one-third fewer games than everyone else, right? So how can you get the one seed? Like, what maximizes your potential to do that? That's a really big decision. It's probably not a run-first offense with this particular roster, right? That's probably how Russ sees it. You know, when we asked him in his Zoom that you played a little clip of, like, he kept mentioning DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett. He mentioned DK like 3 times before he ever mentioned Rashad Penny, right? Why? Because DK Metcalf is like all-world talent, right? And throwing it to him is a better way to get to the Super Bowl than handing it, you know, to Rashad, right? And because I know that's how he thinks, it's really alarming that Pete has now dismissed 2 OCs in a row that put the ball in Russell's hands at the highest rate of Russell's career. Like, I think there's a correlation there that suggests that they're probably not on the same wavelength.
Is John Schneider, where does he fit into this decision, if at all? Because I feel like your philosophy on offense needs to be appropriately mirrored in your personnel. And the offensive line was, you know, I know they weren't a healthy group for a lot of the season, but they were supposed to be healthy against the Rams, and they didn't do so hot, Michael Sean. I know that's not an original story because the Rams have a tendency to blow things up on the Seahawks O-line with regularity. But do they got to address the personnel on the offensive line in order to properly execute the offensive philosophy they end up deciding upon?
You know, I think it's important to remember that Pete is one of the rare NFL coaches whose structure is very similar to a college head coach, and that he rarely answers to anyone. Like, Pete, I mean, Jody Allen, who runs the Paul Allen Trust, which is in control of the franchise right now, like, I get the sense that she's someone who lets the football people do the football stuff. She's not really hands-on like a Jerry Jones. So I say that to say Pete is in charge of everything. So John works for Pete, not the other way around, as you usually see in general manager and head coach relationships. So John has, if Pete says, hey, we're going to run this rock, John got to go out there and get run blockers, right? That's just what he does. What he did in the draft. He drafted Damian Lewis at LSU. Damian was like a top 10 run blocker in 2020, and he was like probably a bottom 10 pass blocking guard in 2020. Like, is that a coincidence? Probably not, right? That's what his scouting report said he would be. That's what the numbers bared out in his rookie year. That's what the film bared out. So you're right. The personnel does have to reflect that. But how much say does John get in that? Probably not a ton, right? And that's part of the problem, too. That's why this OC hire is such a big deal. Because look at what happened in 2017 when they fired Daryl Bevell after, you know, the run game was bad and they threw it too much. They drafted a running back in the first round. It was probably one of the biggest overreactions in terms of a mistake that Pete probably could have made, was using a premium draft pick on a non-premium position at that particular spot in the draft. Like, so if he's going to double down on the run thing again, like, what is he going to do, reach for Najee Harris, you know, in the draft in 2021? Like, is he going to reach for more run blockers who are below average pass protectors? Like, if so, like, I don't know how long Russ is going to want to put up with that. Like he said on Zoom, he wants to be the best quarterback of all time. He wants to throw the most touchdown passes. And he's basically over there counting rings with Tom Brady. Russ stops at 1, and then Tom Brady just keeps going, right? Russ is tired of that. And so I don't know how long he's going to even want to put up with that if that's the vision for the franchise.
Michael Sean Dugar, The Athletic Seattle, joining us on the BFT, Nubian for Canzano. I know it's oversimplifying things to say that in the NFL, passing is good and running is bad, right? Like it's more nuanced than that. I know you've got to be able to run the football effectively. Green Bay obviously runs it extremely well. Even Tampa Bay, they don't have a great run game, but yesterday they were able to do it effectively when they needed to help control things and what have you. In your mind, just as a football fan and someone that knows the game, Michael Sean, like, how important is it to be able to run the football well and effectively? And is that manifest in frequency? I mean, it seems like Pete, he literally said, we can't just run the ball better. We have to run the ball more, right? But at the same time, like, there's a lot of ways to be an effective running team aside from just running it more.
Correct. There's really no correlation between running it more and being better at it. Right? That's, I think, probably the biggest mistake of any football traditionalist right now is the idea that running it more will make you better at it. No, it doesn't. Not at all. If you're bad at something, you're just bad at something. Frequency doesn't change that. That includes passing. It includes kicking. It doesn't really matter. It includes anything. in life for the most part. Like, if you just do it more, it doesn't inherently make you better at it. You know, practice doesn't make perfect, right? You got to actually, perfect practice makes perfect. Right? I think somebody said it might have been Kobe. So me, if I was running a team, right, I would try to maximize whatever my roster suggests I should maximize. Now, that's not the same for every team. A team that has Lamar Jackson, right, an elite running talent, should probably maximize the run game if they're going to build it around him. The same thing with the Panthers when they had Cam Newton. There was no reason for them to be a pass-heavy offense when you had arguably the best running quarterback of all time, right? The Seahawks are built differently. They have two elite receivers, right? They have an elite downfield passer. That's the type of team that should maximize their passing efficiency. And since we're on the subject of my personal philosophy, I give you this. All right. When you have a really efficient passing offense, it lessens the burden of your defense, right? If you notice, most coaches who are in favor of that establish the run mentality, they also add that they need to couple it with an elite defense, right? Because they know that's what you need. They go hand in hand. No team can just ground and ground and pound without having an elite defense. You'll just get smoked. You'll have the ball for a long time. The other team will score touchdowns and you'll lose. Right? You need those two to go hand in hand. Whereas if you have a really efficient passing offense, it masks a lot of the flaws that your team might have. You mentioned teams like, I think Tampa Bay's decent at it, but like look at Kansas City and Buffalo right now. Their run games are just kind of whatever, right? And their defenses are just kind of whatever. Right? But they're so efficient at passing teams that their defense doesn't need to be elite. You don't need the Legion of Boom when you have an elite passing offense. You do need the Legion of Boom if you only have an elite rushing offense, right? That's what Tennessee just learned the hard way, right, because their defense sucked. That you can't just build around Derrick Henry and have crappy defense. That's not how it works. So that is why, personally, I would try to maximize passing efficiency because it extends your margin for error, whereas running the game requires an elite defense, and your margin for error is much smaller.
I want to ask you about Scott Fitterer. I know he's been a long-time executive in that front office. He's off to Carolina. What does that mean for the Seahawks, and what did he bring to the franchise, and what is Carolina getting in that guy?
You know, he was a good person to be close with John Schneider, right? Because while Pete Carroll is like the ultimate say-so guy, like John really runs the personnel department. John does have a lot of say. Like, he can influence Pete. Like, he's fought for guys. You know, in some of the greatest drafts that they've had, it came down to, like, John fighting for him. And, like, when you have someone like John who has to ultimately, I don't want to say stand up to his boss, but you guys know what I mean. Like, if you're going to go to bat, you need people empowering you. Like, nah, John, trust your process. This is our guy. This goes to the philosophy we believe in. We scouted him. We did the stuff. Like, we got to take this dude. Like, this is our philosophy. You need people in your corner who, you know, are your guy like that. So I think John's losing a guy like that. Not that John didn't want to lose him. Like, John encouraged him to get GM jobs because he ultimately wanted to see his guys grow. Trent Kirshner is another one of those. But Scott, if nothing else, is really good for that, on top of just having a good eye for talent too. I mean, Scott has a background in college scouting, which everyone will tell you in the NFL that that's a lot more important than the personnel stuff in the pro side. Because think about it, right? You watch a guy play for the Niners, you can tell whether he can play in the NFL, right? Because he's already there. Right? If you watch a guy play at, you know, University of Central Florida, you don't really know if he can handle it in the AFC East, right? Because he's playing in the AAC or whatever. So if you can nail the college side of things, you're more likely to, like, be a good GM because that's the harder part of the job. So Scott was really good at that. Whereas I think, like, Trent Kirshner, one of the Seahawks' other guys, he doesn't have that college background, which is why you see him getting a million job interviews and not landing one, I think. They lose a really good guy who's good at that, evaluating the college side of the game, I think, in Scott.
Michael, Sean, appreciate your time, my friend. Thanks for breaking down all things Seahawks with us. We'll follow you on Twitter, at Mike Dugar. Thanks for taking the time.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
You got it. Michael Sean Dugar, The Athletic, Seattle. You know, of all those names, I know Adam Gase is on the bottom of my list of guys that I'd like to see take the OC job. I guess Doug Peterson is up there. I want to react to a couple of things that Michael Sean brought to the show and a whole lot more. Jason Cole coming up later as well. BFT, newbie for Canzano.
BFT. From the PAC West Center in downtown Portland, presented by High Caliber Millwrights. In for John Canzano, here's Judah Newby with the bald-faced truth.
And no place I'd rather be than right here on a Monday afternoon. Happy MLK Junior Day to everyone listening in the greater Rose City area. Newbie in for Cazzano. This is the Bald-Faced Truth. John will be back in the chair tomorrow. Peter Sampson with me. Zach Schlegel with me. 2 hours in. Show's flown by. You have a good weekend, Sampson. How was it?
Man, it was solid. It was, I imagine, a lot like yours, filled with football.
Yeah.
I mean, I just parked it on the couch, Oregon scoreboard lottery app open on my phone, and man, just soaked it in. There's nothing better than NFL playoffs. And you know, like the NBA, MLB, those are my main sports. There is nothing better than playoff time.
It's the best, dude. Yeah. It's the best. Wild card weekend had 6 games, and they were all, you know, good. I love the volume of it, but I still think divisional weekend is my favorite because of the one seeds that are involved, and you get the 4 of them. Even though you get 6 now wild card, at least you did this year. I'm not sure if that's going to be the case next year and moving forward again. It might be, but, man, the 4 games I want for Rodgers right out of the gate doing his thing. Bills, Ravens, that was a different game flow than I was expecting. Needless to say, but then Browns Chiefs, obviously drama filled there, and the late game, of course, with Breeze and Brady, there was plenty to unpack there. So we've talked about the Championship Sunday matchups. We've talked about the results from over the weekend. Get your take on the air as well, 503-417-7575. You can also tweet at 750 the game at Judah Newby. Michael Sean Dugar of the Athletic Seattle joined us moments ago with the latest in the Seahawks search for a new OC, and that Adam Gase's name surfaced. And look, it really triggered me in a type of way. I think Adam Gase probably knows how to run an offense, especially when it's just the offense that he needs to worry about. He doesn't need to worry about his trash roster or the defensive side of the ball at all, or dealing with Greg Williams or anything like that. He's more well-suited to be an offensive coordinator, is my point, than he is a head coach. I still just don't want the guy. I don't want to touch him right now. His stock has just dripped too far for me to want to bring him in as Russell Wilson's next play caller.
You don't think that this is a little bit of the Seahawks playing chess here? They float Gase's name out there and everyone freaks out. Then they grab Anthony Lynn or something and everyone goes, oh, thank goodness.
I'm being dead serious. You know, the Anthony Lynn reaction, I must have been one of the only ones that was like, I don't hate it.
Yeah.
When Anthony Lynn's name got floated, I said, I don't hate it. I like the idea of a fired head coach taking over your OC role. He's motivated. He wants to prove people wrong, that he still belongs in the game, yada, yada, yada. The only thing with Anthony, I don't know how big his playbook is. Yeah. And really, if it was him running the, you know, Pep Hamilton, Shane Steichen were both there with the Chargers. I know Lynn had great success running backs coach in Buffalo. He had like LeSean McCoy and other guys, you know, helping him out in that Buffalo backfield with that 27-year-old Tyrod Taylor, you know, much different than the Tyrod that he had, you know, with the Chargers. So I don't know how voluminous and sophisticated his offensive philosophy is or his playbook is. That'd probably be a drawback, but he's a big culture guy.
Yeah, yeah.
And I think he would resonate really well with Russell Wilson.
Well, and he'd certainly resonate better with, I know we're talking the other side, but Jamal Adams than Adam Gase. Are you going to put those two in a locker room again? There is nothing to this. I'm telling you. Unless you're trying to force him to demand another trade so you can restock those draft picks, I don't see it happening.
I forgot about that.
Yeah.
Very good point. Yeah. I don't think you can bring in Adam Gase when Jamal Adams is still on your roster, after the relationship that did fracture in the way that it did with Adams with the New York Jets. I like Doug Peterson probably the most of those names. If we're talking about head coaches now taking OC roles, Doug Peterson's probably the best fit. I forgot that he was a native of the state of Washington. Zach Schlegel pointed that out to me in the commercial break. So there's kind of a fit there with Dougie P, you know, recently fired HC, but running he runs a lot of RPO game. I know Seattle doesn't really do that a whole lot, but they could.
You know what, Judah? I was just thinking about it with Anthony Lynn. Tyrod Taylor, you know, what have we heard of him lately? But I was kind of just looking into best free agency fits for Tyrod Taylor, and one of these guys is writing about Seattle Seahawks being one of those options for him. What if it was Lynn and Tyrod Taylor come in there? Tyrod obviously not to take over the role over Wilson, but just to have a guy that's familiar. And, you know, how do you feel about that one, Judah?
I'd be all for it. I think Tyrod is probably a better backup quarterback than Geno Smith. I mean, especially if it's a guy like Anthony Lynn. I mean, just for a mind like Tyrod to be in the room like that, I think would be helpful if it is Lynn. You know, and Lynn's offenses have not been that bad, honestly. Like, you look at him against DVOA numbers and things like that, he actually had some pretty good offenses. It was more just like game management and consistency that has been his flaws. Chargers, you know, made the playoffs one time. I believe they were 12-4 the year that the Chiefs won the division, and the Chargers were 12-4. They beat Lamar Jackson on the road in the wild card round and then lost in the divisional round in New England, I believe. And that was as far as they went with Anthony Lynn in his first year. But since then, they have been pretty disappointing. So, yeah, a lot to get to. Jason Cole will join us in a few moments as well. But before we get to him, let's play the 2 at 2, the two biggest things that you need to know today.
The 2 at 2.
3.5 minutes to go. We haven't referenced this all show long, but I think the result is in hand here. The San Antonio Spurs playing just down the road, leading the Portland Trail Blazers 118-101 with 3.5 to go. Peter Sampson, no CJ McCollum in this game, and it looks like it's going to hurt Portland.
Yeah, you know, this is the, I believe, the fifth consecutive game that the Blazers have trailed by 16 points. They won 3 of the previous 4 that they trailed. I was commenting to Zach about an hour ago. Every time I glanced up at the TV here in my studio, LaMarcus Aldridge was just cashing a 19-foot jumper from the top of the key. He's got 22, only 2 boards, but he's looking vintage today.
Damian Lillard, 35 points, but 3-for-10 from beyond the arc in his box score.
One really, really good sign, though, Rodney Hood got the start. Let's be honest, dude has looked like a shell so far this season. 21 points, 9-of-14 for Hoodie in 25 minutes. That's great news.
That is good news. All right, fantastic. I didn't get your take after they lost to Indiana the other night. I know that was the game that Yusuf got hurt, right? So are we just chalking it up to that? They bounced back with a win the next game against who would they play after that over the weekend? Some other Eastern Conference.
Atlanta.
That's right, on Saturday, and they beat them. Big game for Ennis in that game.
Yeah. I'm not too concerned about the offense, because if there's one thing Ennis Kanter can do, it's score down in the post, grab offensive rebounds. Obviously, you feel for Yusuf Nurkic. But at this point, man, you have got to sign another big man. You can actually sign a big man to the vet minimum and stay under the luxury tax now, because now Nurkic is guaranteed not to hit his games played in incentive, so that frees up there, have about $1.25 million. So who knows, if maybe like a Dwayne Dedman or someone is out there, who knows? I mean, hell, you could just go small ball, start Gary Trenton, and move Robert Covington to center. He did it in Houston.
He definitely did it in Houston. Yeah, I haven't seen James with Brooklyn yet. Has he gotten action with them yet?
Harden?
Yeah, I haven't seen how he's done. How's he look?
I feel so vindicated. James Harden is the first guy to have a 30-point triple-double in his first game with a new team, and he set the Nets franchise assist record with 14. He did quite well for himself.
Awesome. Kyrie didn't play, though.
I
need to see him all 3.
And that's the thing, is I don't think Harden's going to be the guy to... Look, I think James is kind of a crappy dude, but I think he's motivated. He knows that winning the big one is the last thing that he needs to do. I think he's going to be motivated, but Kyrie is the X factor to blow that whole thing up with those two guys.
It's the little gif for the video, the chef in the kitchen, you know, throwing the fries into like the boiling water or whatever, and it takes off in flames.
Yeah.
That's one of the best gifs out there for sure, but I really feel like it applies in this situation. We'll see. Kyrie's not playing tonight?
Not playing tonight against Milwaukee. He's ramping it back up.
All right, the second of our 2 at 2, I just saw it come across my email inbox. Got it. All right, this is from the University of Oregon. Oregon men's basketball resumes activities. The Oregon men's basketball program has been cleared to resume all team-related activities, Dana Altman announced today. The health and safety of our student-athletes is always our top priority, and we are grateful to our medical team for guiding us through this process. We are resuming activities today. We'll continue following all COVID-related protocols. 21st-ranked Oregon will host Oregon State Saturday, 7:30, on the greatest network alive, the Pac-12 Network. Oregon had to pause for a positive COVID test. 3 games were postponed during that time. So Oregon men's basketball is back, resuming activities after about the week-long pause. So we'll see. They'll get back at it, ranked number 21 in the country. Oregon State, by the way, Big win for them over the weekend, right when they had to have it. I think they beat Arizona State. They got pantsed by Arizona Thursday night. That's one of those games I wish that college betting was available on the Oregon Sports Lottery scoreboard, because I saw that spread. It was Arizona minus 8, and I've seen this Beaver team play, and I'm like, dude, how is it only 8 with the Arizona Wildcats right now? Lay it. And they ended up winning by like darn near 30 or something like that. So, yeah, the Beavers, they did get a big win over Bobby Hurley, ASU. So we'll see how the game formerly known as the Civil War will take place on the hardwood Saturday night. Beavers and Ducks on...
We interrupt this broadcast with a special announcement from the Bald...
Hey, sorry to interrupt the podcast, but if you want to listen to more of the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show, including more of this segment that you're listening to, make sure you subscribe on SoundCloud and iTunes to the Bald Faced Truth Radio Show. Thanks for listening.